This is the NCARB podcast, where you get an inside look at licensure, regulation, and the initiatives shaping the future of architectural practice. I'm your host, Andy McIntyre, Vice President of Marketing and Communications at NCARB. And this season, we're diving into Pathways to Practice, NCARB's multi-year effort to rethink how architects become licensed.
Architecture is the hardware to the software of life, right? It is fundamentally about that interaction, and it makes life easier if we have a built environment that works.
Across 8 episodes, we'll explore how licensure got to where it is today and where it needs to go next. We talk with architects, educators, regulators, and NCARB leaders about education, experience, and the exam, and why each of those pillars is evolving.
And that portion of school where you go from conceptual to real is also really challenging. It's not something you're really gently moved into. It's kind of like you're doing something that's flowy and crazy, and all of a sudden, wait, you actually have to make this work.
You'll hear how the NCARB competency standard was developed, how research is shaping future licensure models, and what a more flexible, competency-based approach could mean for candidates from a wide range of backgrounds.
So we've seen that in our data as the number of reciprocal licenses starts to decrease a little bit, but that number of individuals who are licensed holds steady.
We also tackle the big questions. Why does licensure look the way it does today? Where do candidates face the biggest barriers? And how can we expand access without lowering standards?
Not everybody fits into the same mold. And so having different pathways to licensure, I think, is really important.
Whether you're a licensure candidate, an educator, a firm leader, or a regulator, this season offers clarity, context, and transparency into one of the most important conversations facing the profession.
Does this requirement to complete all divisions of the exam place an unfair burden on any one group or other?
This is Pathways to Practice, only on the NCARB podcast. Please follow the link in the show notes, subscribe now, and join us as we explore the future of architectural licensure.
This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by our generous sponsors, BetterHelp and RCAT.com. My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. David Clark, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Great to be here. Thanks, Mark.
Oh, it is great to have you on the show. David, you and I have gone back a long ways. When I first started blogging back in the mid-2000s, you were there.
Yeah.
And then when I launched the Entree Architect membership, when I did my 12-12-12 project, you were there.
Yeah.
When I launched the first membership in early 2013, you were there. You were one of the founding members of Entree Architect at the membership. And I've always been there to not only learn for yourself, but to share, to give back to the community. And that was part of that early mastermind. Today, we have 26, 27 mastermind groups.
Wow.
And amazing. You helped launch it all.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's exciting. So it's great to have you here all these years later and be part of what we're doing here.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Let me introduce you to anyone who may not know who you are. David Clark is an architect based in Southern California with 40 years of experience in the profession. He's taught architecture at universities for more than 10 years and has been the principal owner of 3 different architecture firms. He's a published author, he's a returned Peace Corps volunteer, and he's traveled to over 30 countries. In the past year, David's been transitioning his role from practicing to mentoring and training for young architect professionals, emerging professionals. He shares his knowledge on social media at The Architects Coach, so you can find him there. Just search for The Architects Coach, you'll find him. And recently, he launched a new company called The Architects Accelerator. It's a platform for online, on-demand training. He's a longtime friend, and as I mentioned, he's a founding member here at Entree Architect. So David, it's great to have you here.
Great. I'm happy to be here. Great to reconnect with you too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love this. And I don't know your origin story. You know, I know some of it, but I'd love to learn your origin story. So go back as far as you feel comfortable. And when did you discover your passion to become an architect, and maybe even who or what inspired you to become an architect?
Yeah, it does go way back because I was probably 8 or 9 years old, and probably my grandmother was part inspiration because she grew up during First World War and the Depression and Second World War. And so she hoarded and had these massive pieces of paper that were probably 4 foot square. I have no idea where she got them, but it was an endless supply. And I'd just get on the floor and start drawing. You know, just it was more than doodling. I realized that I was like creating cities of, you know, places, and then I'd draw little people in them and so forth. And when I would go out, I would be in a building, and I'd go skiing with my dad when I was little. And when I was cold, sit in the lodge with hot cocoa, I'd be doodling on, I don't know, anything that I could find, drawing a floor plan of the ideal lodge the way I would want it to be. So I always wanted to be an architect, always from 8 or 10 years old. And it was probably a big inspiration. My stepmother graduated from architecture school at University of Oklahoma, first female graduate. She went into more architectural engineering and eventually worked for Boeing. And so she always had these great books. There was this huge book on Frank Lloyd Wright that I loved to look through when I was, you know, in my teens. And then probably in junior high school, I had a teacher by the name of Mr. Roberts who had more than just a drafting class. He would teach airbrush. He taught photo montage. He taught line drawing.
Wow.
And so he would just look at each student and figure out what was their strengths. And he saw that my strength was just in drawing things mechanically. And so he taught me mechanical drafting. And then he took me personally to local architecture firms. This is in the Portland, Oregon area at the time, and had architects walk me around their studios and show me how they did things. And
wow, what a dedicated teacher.
Yeah.
I mean, typically mechanical drawing classes are run by the gym teacher. They throw some pencils at you. Yeah. They have these fancy drafting boards, and then the gym teacher goes and reads his magazine.
Yeah, exactly. You
know, follow some rules. So to have a dedicated teacher like that was such a benefit to you.
Yeah, absolutely. In high school, still knew that was the main thing I wanted to do. So there was drafting classes there. And we actually had some competitions designed. I think they were like little cabins or something. And so we had a big class and we'd all design a little building, a cabin or house or whatever it was, and build a model of it. And, you know, wood model primarily. We used balsa wood and so forth. And there was competitions among the other high schools. And we swept all the other high schools in that competition, both years that we competed in that. Then between my junior and senior year, they started what they called a construction cluster. And this was basically seniors would build a house, and that was, you know, to learn construction and from dirt all the way up to shingles and interior.
Wow. That's in high school.
That's in high school. Yeah. And so I signed up for that class ahead of time so I could do that in my senior year. And the drafting teacher asked me to draw the plans for the house. And I've actually got a picture of myself hunched over the drafting board as a junior during the summer. Nice. Between my junior and senior
year. Your
first
commission.
Yeah. So that was a lot of fun. And then my guidance counselor told me to go to the University of Washington. Now, I was in the Portland, Oregon area, and I had no idea. You know, I'm just following. This is what my counselor said to do. They had, at the time, a 2+3 5-year program and a master's program. But so I got there and I'm taking, you know, these economics and calculus and physics and environmental science and very little architecture. And I was so frustrated. It's like, all I wanted to do was get into architecture. So I transferred out. I didn't do very well because I was so distracted being a freshman. And so I transferred out and picked up some courses at Portland State and then transferred down to Oregon and did my Bachelor of Architecture at Oregon. From there, it was just a series of interesting experiences that translated into where I am now.
So when you left Oregon, did you get a job in Oregon?
No, it was 1984 and it was a massive recession in Oregon. The whole timber industry had collapsed. Every one of my classmates said, unless they had a family business that they were going to in Oregon, they're all headed to Southern California. And as I didn't want to go to Southern California, I want to do something really different, just go off. Well, we had learned about all kinds of incredible cities. You know, we studied cities in school, and one of them was Boston. We had a faculty member who had really focused on Boston. Jane Jacobs was one of our main authors that we were reading and learning about the way cities work. So I'm going to Boston. So I just packed up and moved out to Boston and got a job at Goody Clancy. We had about 30 to 40 people in the firm at that time, worked on large scale housing for the most part. Fantastic experience, partly because I had, through school, kind of a problem with teamwork. I had really gotten frustrated with my team members whenever I did a joint project because they weren't carrying their share of the load and I ended up doing all of it. So what's the point? I just do solo projects. I just want to, you know, get things done myself because I can't rely on my team members. But that experience at Goody Clancy just turned me around because it was such a team-oriented group. The principals, Joan Goody, John Clancy, Marvin had passed away before I got there. And they were an incredible group of people who instilled the concept of teamwork and getting along and so much respect at all levels. I was just walking in, sit down at the empty desk, and the principals and the senior architects would treat me like I had been there for years. So it was really a great experience. But my structures instructor at Oregon told me, you know, wherever you go that first year, only stay there 1 year. Don't go more than 1 year because you got to have different experiences. You have to diversify. And there's people there now, a good friend who still works there. He's a director of one of the studios and they have hundreds of employees now. And I think, you know, what would have happened if I had stayed in one place, you know, probably be a principal or something for Goody Clancy. But life isn't like that. You really do have to move on. And I've had some incredible experiences since then. I went into the Peace Corps after that, traveled all around the Eastern Caribbean.
So when you left Goody Clancy, you went to the Peace Corps?
Yeah. Yeah.
After a year.
And I was an architect there too. So got placed on a little Caribbean island, island of Montserrat, to be the public works architect. I had two staff members drafting under me. I was training them at the time. And this was really kind of the inspiration for where teaching came in and kind of where I am today even, because one of them was a surveyor and he knew drafting. He could do drafting pretty well. And he drew plans for homes on the side. But it's a British colony and the British colony had exams that you had to pass at different levels. And they asked me to teach them how to draft, but also to be able to pass this exam. And so, sure, I'll, you know, teach a class. And there were probably 8 or 10 young men in that classroom, all very excited to be there and learn drafting. And I taught them how to draft. And they definitely could draft by the time they ended it. But every one of them failed the exam.
Yeah.
And that started me on a different journey about what is education and how do people learn? And I think probably right there, I decided I wanted to teach architecture in the university. I did my graduate record exam in the Caribbean and then went to Los Angeles for various reasons. But I asked my previous senior studio instructor, John Reynolds, who's an amazing guy. He recommended that I go to UCLA to get my master's degree there so I could get qualified to teach in a university. And so that's what I did. I went to LA. I worked part-time at a little firm.
So you ended up in Southern California?
Anyway, yeah. And that was a long time ago. It was 1980s. But I took my exam there in California. It wasn't connected with NCARB at the time. It was California Architect Licensing Exam, CALE. And 4 days of intense exams to cover 7 total exams, including a 12-hour design exam. And I studied hard for months and months, and I sat for the exams in California while I was working there, just before I started my graduate study at UCLA, and passed all the exams except for seismic design, which really upset me because I was like top of the class in my structures, and I was the TA for the structures instructor in my third year of architecture school. And he wrote a book on seismic design that he asked me to illustrate.
Oh, wow.
So I should have known much more, but I missed that exam by a couple of points and had to wait for the next sitting, but passed it the next time. And so I got licensed in California, and you know, they have an interview here where you go in. So after you've passed all the exams, they say, okay, now you're eligible for the interview. I went into the interview, and there's like Olympian gods sitting in front of me who were larger than life, that I was so intimidated, and they asked me questions that I couldn't answer. I left that place with my tail between my legs. I was so embarrassed. And I thought, okay, well, I guess I'm going to have to redo that. But then I got a letter, said, congratulations, architect.
Yeah. Congratulations.
That was 34 years ago. And I kept that license all this time, even though, you know, I didn't actually practice in California after getting licensed. I started teaching. I got a job at Kansas State University as an assistant professor, tenure track position, and taught third year design studio, construction materials. I ran the materials lab, and I got to teach some theory courses that were on vernacular architecture that were just kind of for fun, but really learned so much in those first few years. And Kansas State had a model in which two faculty would basically lead a double studio. So I had a mentor the entire time I was teaching. Don Watts was my first mentor there. We taught together, and we're still to stay in touch. He's retired in Indiana, and he was such an inspiration for my teaching career. So taught for 5 years at Kansas State and didn't see a lot of incremental change in my salary. So, and I had a newborn daughter in 1995 that I thought, you know, really need to up the game here for. And so I considered going back into practice at that time. But then a job opening came up at UT San Antonio. That program was a 4-year program that fed UT Austin for their master's program. And they wanted to start a master's program and become an accredited school. So they hired 6 people, kind of nicknamed ourselves the UTSA 6, who went there to get this program accredited. And that was a fascinating experience, going through that whole transformation process of creating a school of architecture. They had a school of architecture. It was just a 4-year program. But to get accredited, there were certain things that they had to change in order to meet all the requirements. And that's something that really inspired some things that I'm doing right now, because the accreditation process kind of makes programs accountable and quantify what students are doing on a level that they can compare to other schools. So you get this sort of equality of education programs across the nation. I think that they're, you know, they'd love to have that across the world, so that when somebody graduates with, whether it's a bachelor's of architecture or a master's of architecture, and it's accredited, that that's basically a consistent standard all across anywhere in the country, or Canada and Mexico now. So, but what happened was the things that students do, it's like these core principles that they do in every project. And they just keep kind of doing the same thing, but it's to make sure that they learn these fundamental principles, these fundamental aspects of what design is and what sustainability is. And but throughout their education, they're getting the same tasks that they repeat over and over again to get this iterative process of learning. And after 5 years of that, there was a lot of politics. That was a real challenge. Only one of the 6 ended up staying after 5 years. But they did get accredited. I think they got accredited the year after I left in 2000, or perhaps the following year. And I went into practice because it was really stressful trying to transform a program. But, you know, they did it. You know, I feel proud that I got to be part of getting that going. But it was too stressful for me and my young family. And so going into practice, I moved to New Mexico and started up in the mountains, Ruidoso, this little town in southern New Mexico, that beautiful, you know, pine trees and snow and gorgeous little town, and just started my practice up there.
When was that?
2000.
So 2000, you moved to New Mexico, started a practice. What kind of architecture did you practice?
Well, I started residential because I still didn't have my NCARB certificate. I only had a California license. So I wasn't licensed in New Mexico. In order to get licensed in New Mexico, I had to get an NCARB certificate. So I went to NCARB and put in my application. At that time, they were so overwhelmed with work, the applications. They said, okay, it's going to be a minimum 4-month wait before we can approve this. So I was just doing residential and remodels, mostly whatever I could get. I made great contacts with the Builders Association there, and everybody was so eager to have another architect in town because there was just one guy who was basically a snowboard guy who was a great architect, but he was only part-time architect during the wintertime. He was skiing. So they wanted somebody else. And so everybody's very welcoming. But then as it came close to 4 months, I contacted NCARB again and they said, basically, what application?
They had
lost it. So,
oh my goodness. So for those of you listening, NCARB has a reputation, right? And they're much better today and they're doing a great job today, but they have that reputation for a reason. And, you know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, they were struggling with administration.
Yeah. And so I put that together finally, you know, a couple months later, and I got it back to them and they said, okay, it's going to be another 4 months before we can give you an answer. This time I was contacting them every month just to say, okay, how's it going? Any news? And they stay on top of it. They didn't lose my application. So they came back and said, I didn't have enough experience. So because
after all that,
they would not count my Peace Corps experience. So California did. I was working full-time as an architect, but my supervisor was a civil engineer. And said, now, normally, if you were just working for an engineer, you could get half credit for that time. Or because it was out of the country, if you worked under an architect, you could get half credit for that. But since it was out of the country and you worked under a civil engineer, you get zero credit for 2 years.
Great. Thanks. After 8 months of waiting, you let me know. Thank you. Yeah.
But they cut me a deal. They said, okay, if you work under a licensed architect for 6 more months, we'll give you the certificate. So there was another architect from El Paso had just moved up there and he wanted to retire, but architects don't retire. They just keep doing something. And so he worked out of his home. And so he hired me to work for him part-time. I had to work at least 20 hours a week for him. And so that's what I did. And I did residential the rest of the time. So started doing small commercial under him. And that was a great experience because he was one of those guys, God bless him, he's passed away since, but I learned what not to do. So he was a terrible businessman. And I tried to, you know, resurrect clients that had gotten so frustrated with him. But I learned a lot about running a business, how not to run a business. And so I got my NCARB certificate. Within 2 weeks after that, I had my New Mexico license, and then I could start doing practice. So it took me a couple of years. But in the meantime, when I left UTSA, I had no CAD skills. I was started my, by this time, I don't know, AutoCAD 2000, I think, was out. And I was just hand drafting. I said, I've got to learn something. And so I took an AutoCAD class in Phoenix, like a 3-day class, and learned AutoCAD. And I thought, this is so easy. So why didn't I learn this before? And so then I jumped right into using AutoCAD. Practice there for through the end of 2007. I met my current wife in 2005, and we started working together. She was helping me with kind of the administrative portions of my business, and business just took off just because I was no longer trying to do everything. So part of the problem with a lot of entrepreneur architects is that they're trying to do everything.
Right.
And when you get a little help and you can really focus on what you're good at, that's when things really start to take off.
Let's take a quick break to say thank you to our sponsors for their support of this episode. Architects, listen up. Is something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? Regardless if you have a clinical mental health issue like depression or anxiety, or if you're just a human who lives in this world and is going through a hard time, therapy can give you the tools to approach your life in a very different way. I know this community of small firm architects very well, and I see many of you struggling. That's why I reached out to this episode's sponsor, BetterHelp. BetterHelp is a platform that makes finding a therapist easier because it's online, it's remote. And by filling out just a few questions, BetterHelp can match you with a professional therapist in as little as a few days. It's easy to sign up and get matched with a therapist. There's a link in the show notes. It's betterhelp.com/architect. Just use that link, betterhelp.com/architect. Clicking that link helps support this podcast, but it also gets you 10% off your first month of BetterHelp. So you can connect with a therapist and see if it helps you. If you need someone to talk to, consider online therapy with BetterHelp. Click the link in the show notes or visit betterhelp.com/architect. That's betterhelp.com/architect. Thank you to BetterHelp for supporting this podcast and for supporting our community of small firm architects. For over 30 years, RCAT has been providing AEC professionals with high quality and up-to-date building product information. Today, RCAT.com is much more than a product catalog, with BIM, CAD, and specifications created in collaboration with manufacturers. Beyond that, RCAT.com also offers lead data, continuing education resources, newsletters featuring the latest projects and products, and don't forget, detailed podcasts. RCAT.com is truly the one-stop shop for everything architecture. Try it out. Go to RCAT.com. That's ARCAT.com. So how did you get from New Mexico to California where you are now, back to Southern California?
Yeah, so the recession hit New Mexico pretty early, and we moved to Phoenix first, and I worked for a high-end residential firm there, Peterson Architects. Now it's PHX in Scottsdale.
He's been on the show.
Oh, yeah. And worked for him for that year, 2008 to 2009, as their executive manager. And so I was training staff. I was kind of overseeing operations. And they had just an amazing crew. But then the recession hit Arizona, and everything started shutting down. People getting laid off left and right. It was really tough. They went from 25 people down to like 4 or 6, something like that, including myself. I had to lay off myself. So we went back to New Mexico, and that's when we met, because I was working for a firm in Las Cruces, New Mexico. The owner of that firm was about 10 years older than me, and he interviewed me. He said, you know, maybe I'd be interested in selling the firm to you if you're interested in buying the firm. And yeah, I think I'd like to own a firm that's already kind of up and running and figure out how to do that. And I had also, during the recession, I taught myself Revit. So I started using Revit. Now, he did not use Revit, but he had Revit in his software package. They were just using AutoCAD at the time. So I introduced using Revit in some of the projects, and that became, you know, pretty helpful. It was still a pretty rudimentary tool at the time. In 2010, 2011 is when we started using that. But after a couple of years, I felt like I needed to do more for myself, because I was still working under him and he was very controlling of his firm. So I started doing a side hustle. I went back up to Ruidoso, started doing some stuff on the side, making reconnections. And that's where I saw the Entre Architect announcement for the Mastermind Founders Group. And I thought, this is what I need. So that's when we met and started working together, talking, was that about once a week or so?
Yeah, once a week.
And really inspirational to have all those people all over the country to be interacting. And that was the first time I'd been involved in something like that. And so it really helped. In fact, it ultimately saved me. The question of how did I get to Southern California from New Mexico was that. So I did end up buying that firm, operated it for 3 years, and really transformed it, turned it into a Revit studio. It was the wrong market. But what I realized that I had some great people working for me. They were really outstanding. I was really helping them to grow by giving them a lot of autonomy in what they were doing. but the market just couldn't sustain what I wanted to do. I wanted to really keep growing the firm, and the market in Southern New Mexico just wasn't there. El Paso was kind of a good old boys market, and I couldn't break into it. Albuquerque was getting a little bit slow in their work up there, and so they started coming down to Southern New Mexico, big firms that just couldn't compete with somebody, you know, do a local fire station and they've got 50 fire stations under their portfolio, right, or something, you know. So I did a lot of collaboration with the firms in Albuquerque and did some great projects. We did a lot of university work for New Mexico State and Doñana Community College, Western New Mexico. We did some great projects for dormitories and classrooms and partnering with firms out of Albuquerque, and then did a police headquarters and fire station for the city of Las Cruces that partnered with an Albuquerque firm. So that was how we really survived, was doing the partnering, but it was just still not enough. And I just had to, got to close the doors. So, you know, I was bleeding, and my parents had moved out to Southern California in the Palm Springs area. And we had visited them there, really liked it. And I thought, this is, you know, so much nicer. So I told the crew, I said, you know, you guys are so good working together. You ought to form your own firm. And so they formed a company called Desert Peak Architects, and they're still operating in Las Cruces, New Mexico. And my wife and I just sold the house and packed up and moved out to Southern California. Found a great job working for a guy that has a firm in San Diego, and he had just bought a firm in Palm Springs. And the guy who owned it was wanting to retire. So he wanted a senior principal architect who could take over that firm. And so for a year, we did a kind of a transition thing with the guy who owned it. And so worked in Palm Springs for a couple of years, and then we moved the firm to Palm Desert. That's where we are right now. I'm operating the firm. We have just a couple of employees there doing mostly hospital work and institutional, cities, counties, doing a lot of sheriff station work right now. So it's a full-time job. And so trying to start my new side hustle and my part-time job and my full-time job at the same time. So this is the kind of the direction I'm headed, is to make this transition. Because I thought, well, you know, retirement is going to happen or it's not going to happen. You know, the business in Las Cruces kind of wiped me out. So I'm kind of starting over. And needed to just start finding a way to gather my life together and create something new. So that's when kind of when the coaching and training came up, that there's an opportunity. I ran into a group called mastermind.com, and they have a great program for training people who want to be coaches and want to do online courses. There are some other companies out there doing that too, but I found these guys to be really inspirational. It's based under a guy named Dean Graziosi, who studied under Tony Robbins. I started studying under Tony Robbins probably 2006, 2007, just mostly for inspiration. I had other coaches throughout those years. And so now I'm back, you know, studying under Tony Robbins and Dean Graziosi under Mastermind. And then I joined their, what they call the Action Academy. They are a group, basically it's more intense training, live training with coaches to help you accelerate your business into coaching. I'm a founding member of that now too. So they just started
that. You have a track record.
Yeah.
Early adopter.
Yeah. But now there's, you know, probably well over 100 members in that program who are active, doing all kinds of fascinating things. A lot of people into life coaching, but a lot of people very practical, real estate coaching, financial accountability type coaching, physical fitness, just all kinds of things. There's another architect in that group, and she wants to do coaching with people who want to transition from being an employee to running their own firm.
Yeah.
So that's actually where I started, where I thought, well, maybe that's what I want to help people become independent. I realized there are a lot of people in that space right now, and I could learn from them, but I realized what there weren't people doing is helping people make the transition from just entering a firm, and how do they get to the point where they're really knowledgeable about project management? Because project management is, well, that's what architects do. We execute and deliver projects for our clients. And there's nobody helping the young emerging professionals who are coming in. A lot of them still have the college mindset, and then they're taking the exams, which is still kind of a college mindset, but they're trying to get into it. And I found a lot of them are saying, you know, I'm not getting any help to learn what I'm supposed to do on the job. Right. And a lot of them are getting jobs and getting kind of stuck there too. They're really good at computers and rendering, BIM modeling. And so, and then they get this label of, okay, now you're the BIM manager. You're the 3D rendering guy, or, you know, you're in charge of, or just stuck drafting, especially a lot of the small firms are still using AutoCAD and they're just CAD drafting. And especially firms that are in that sort of 5 to 10 person range, that with older principals who are used to running everything. And this is basically the guy I was working for in Las Cruces, that he ran every project. He was at every project meeting. He was in control of everything and really burned out. He was, he was so burned out. He was burned out when I started working for him. And, you know, 8 years later, he was still burned out.
Pretty common scenario for architects.
Yeah. So I wanted to find, you know, what is it that young architects and emerging professionals really want to know, because, or really need to know, because, you know, sometimes they don't know what they want to know. They don't know what they need to know. And even if they have a mentor, which I think is great, if they've got a mentor, that's fantastic. That's one of the key things that any young architect needs, is some kind of role model, some kind of mentor. But even those mentors who are seasoned architects don't necessarily pass on the information that they really need, because most of it's just, you know, like the logistics of how to do things. We use these systems and this is the way that we do projects, and they try to become more efficient with what they're doing. But the core things that I think that young architects and emerging professionals in architecture really need to know, primarily, fundamentally, leadership, because that's what we do, is lead people. We've got project teams. If you're going to be in charge of a project, you have to be in charge of what people are doing. And so there's the team that's maybe in the office. You might have two or three other people helping you out on a project. And so it's important to be leading them and not just trying to micromanage what they're doing. If you're leading a project, you've got client interactions. So now you're leading a client. You've got consultants, engineering consultants. You're leading those consultants. You've got to get them basically in line, in schedule, to deliver what you need on time. And you've got a sphere of influence over contractors and plan reviewers and the general public too. Because, you know, as architects, we are often doing public presentations. We're often in the public eye. And what do you do when the public is kind of negative toward what your project is? You know, how do you handle that? So you have some leadership responsibilities about leading all kinds of different people. And they're all different in how they act. And so learning how to manage a plan reviewer, how to turn a plan reviewer into somebody who is a bureaucrat, who is, you know, having a bad day, into somebody who actually helps you achieve what you need.
Yeah. Right. And there's a skill to that, right?
Yeah.
And if you do it wrong, it could get worse rather than get better.
Oh, I had a great experience with that boss in Las Cruces, that his office was kind of in the back of the studio, and he's on the phone with this plan reviewer and it's escalating. Suddenly it's yelling with a lot of profanity, and finally the phone slamming down. You know, we didn't, and I'm like, well, how did that go? You know, so, you know, and that probably damaged his reputation with that plan reviewer even longer. But he was trying to control a situation that he didn't really have control on. On the other hand, there's just give people respect. That's one of the key things, is giving people respect at all levels. And it goes a long ways. And then there's like these core competencies that people who manage projects need to know, like decision making and time management, how to schedule without creating stress on the team, kind of stacking projects. How do you manage multiple projects at the same time? And there's communication skills, just because we're communicating with all kinds of different people for different reasons and different modes. I think that delegation is a huge one, because as a project manager, your job is not to do the project. Your job is to make sure the project gets done. And if you've got a team, you've got to kind of look for where people's strengths are and direct them to do what they do best. And you can really develop a great team by focusing on getting them aligned with their strengths. If I see people procrastinating and they're doing things that are wasting time, it mostly means that they're not comfortable with what they're doing.
Right. They're avoiding what they should be doing because they may not know how to do it, or some resistance is keeping them from doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Exactly. Yeah. So they're better off doing something else. And so what is that? So you look for, you know, what do they really enjoy doing in their job? What do they excel at? And you try to encourage them to be contributing what they do best. And that is how a lot of people get stuck, though. You know, there's this sort of zone of, heard it from an education speaker, Dr. Patrice Jackson, who said there's a zone of mastery around an individual. This is something that you do really, really well.
Yeah.
And probably that's why you got your job, because you can do it better than anybody else. But you get stuck there because your employer wants you to keep doing that forever.
Right. Because you're so good at it.
Yeah, so good at it.
Yeah.
Everybody's got to grow. If you're not growing, you're dying. So you've always got to be pushing yourself, growing to become something more. So that's what I want to help young architects, young emerging professionals who are working on becoming architects. I found this, the newest generation coming out of college are so ambitious and so motivated.
Yes.
That they really want to move ahead. And I'm afraid that there's some that are getting lost. There are a lot of jobs available right now, and it's going to get better because inflation is going to come down and people are going to start building more, and that's going to be good for architect jobs coming up in the next couple of years. And so you can't get stuck.
So how are you doing this logistically? Where and how can they connect with you to take these classes and courses?
So I'm developing three courses. The first one is going to be on leadership. Second one's going to be on core competencies for project management. And the third one is kind of a really advanced class because it's going to be on project finances, something that most project managers, as good as they are, still don't get trained in.
Yeah.
So I'm working on the first one, should be out in a couple of months, probably.
So probably by the time this episode is published, it probably will be ready.
Oh, that's fantastic. I created a platform called www.architectsaccelerator.com. And if you put a /join after that, you'll get a landing page that you can give me your email address and I'll keep you informed on everything that we're doing to create these courses and get a little discount on the tuition initially. So once I get all three courses out, it'll be kind of like a package and that discount won't be available anymore.
Yeah.
So that'll be offered through architectsaccelerator.com that is kind of redirected to a platform that where the courses will actually be on mastermind.com, and they will house the courses. That's where you'd be directed to actually purchase the course.
All right. I love it. It's such a needed niche. I think that young architects, when they find themselves as employees, unless you're in a progressive firm that is actively developing their younger architects through coaching and mentoring with an internal process, which most don't.
Right.
Architects are not being trained this, right? It takes years and years and years to develop the skills that you're talking about. And you're offering it. I love the name Architects Accelerator. It's literally accelerating them through their careers to not only be able to do their job better for their employees or employers, but potentially be able to start their own firms and be able to teach others those skills.
Yeah.
But also become more valuable, right? When you have those skills, especially if you go through a program like yours, David, and have that certification that you've done that, right? Now you're skilled at that.
Yeah.
And show that to your employer. Say, hey, I've taken this class. I've taken this course. I know these skills. I'm worth more, right? And maybe even from a firm side, firms may be able to come to you and say, hey, I have a team of project managers that I want to send through your program so my team can be better at these skills. I love this idea.
Yeah. So that's kind of my next strategy, is going to the principals of the firms and offering, say, you know, these courses are available. I'd like to get them all out there first and get some feedback to find out, you know, are there some areas that need improvement? I'd like to, you know, get that kind of feedback initially. And then I can go to the firm leaders. This training is here. You don't have to train it. You're training your staff yourself.
Yeah.
You can, you know, rely on this and give them a taste of, you know, what that training is, and hopefully they'll buy into that as well.
I love it. So architectsaccelerator.com is the website. architectsaccelerator.com/join is where you can get on the waiting list.
www.
Right. Add www before Architects Accelerator. So www.architectsaccelerator.com and then /join to get on the waiting list. Mm-hmm. I will have a link to all of this on the show notes. You actually may be launched by the time this episode goes live, so just check it out. Before we jump off here, David, I'd love to get your thoughts on my final question. Mm-hmm. What is one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
Well, it might be obvious, but I guess training is a huge component to that. Train your staff and it'll make things so much better. If you just, you know, try to give them tasks that they do over and over again, they're going to get burnt out. They're going to get tired, probably lose staff. But if you train them and you enable them to take control of their own life in architecture, they're going to pay you back with productivity that is astounding.
His name is David Clark. You can learn more. Go to architectsaccelerator.com. So www.architectsaccelerator.com/join to join the list. His email is coach@architectsaccelerator.com as well. So if you have any questions or have some thoughts about what he's doing, reach out to him.
You can find me on LinkedIn, and I'm in Instagram as well.
All right. David Clark is his name. David, thank you for all the years of being part of the Entree Architect community. Thank you for sharing your knowledge at the Architects Accelerator, building a platform like that. I think, and I haven't heard of anyone else doing something similar. And so it's a much needed niche within our profession. Thank you for doing that. And thanks for coming by here and hanging out with me at the Entree Architect podcast.
Well, I appreciate it, Mark. Thank you for asking me to be on, and I'm excited to contribute, and I look forward to your podcast every time it comes out.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, we'll have to do it again after you launch, and we'll see how things are going. We'll check in for an update. All right.
Okay.
Thanks, David.
Thanks, Mark.
If you liked this episode of Entree Architect Podcast, please share a link to this episode with a friend. Either just click the share button or highlight the URL and send the link to this episode with a friend, because that's how Entree Architect has grown to serve thousands more architects just like you. Throughout the 10 plus years of Entree Architect, that's how we've grown, architect to architect. So I would love for you to share this episode and all the episodes with one friend every week. We'd love that. And thank you to our sponsors for this episode. We don't have an episode if there's no sponsors. So thank you to our sponsors. Links to those sponsors, which you should go visit and click, and all the resources that we discussed today for this specific episode, they are all available at entrearchitect.com/podcast. Every episode that we've recorded is there, entrearchitect.com/podcast. Go click the links to the sponsors and say hello. Entree Architect is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. You should go visit that at gablemedia.com. That is the next evolution of interactive media and resources for the AEC community. You can now earn continuing education credits for listening to select episodes of this podcast, Entree Architect Podcast. Yes, AIA CEUs for listening to a podcast. It's there, and many other podcasts are there as well. And you can listen to all of them and get credit. Learn more about our program, Gable Members Program, at the gablemedia.com/members website. That's gablemedia.com/members. And if you are a small firm architect, join us today at Entree Architect Network. That is the worldwide organization for small firm entrepreneur architects. If you own your own architecture firm, you are an entrepreneur architect. You are an entree architect. With weekly live group business coaching, yep, we have business coaching there, monthly live business training with AIA CEUs, two a month, so 24 AIA credits per year, including 12 of those are HSWs. We have them in the membership. Business resources, all the resources you need to run your business, special session webinars, mastermind groups, and a thriving community of small firm architects just like you. Hundreds of architects are there waiting for you to join. So we provide the support and encouragement you need to succeed as a small firm architect. I know that you haven't been trained as a business person when you launched your firm. That's what we do. Come learn how to run a business at Entree Architect Network. And today you can go join right now for free for 30 days at this link, entrearchitect.com/30 days. We'll give you free 30 days for membership. Go check it out at entrearchitect.com/30 days, and I will see you there. Thank you for listening to this episode of Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and I want you to remember three words: love, learn, share. Have a great day. Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.
Imagine earning continuing education credits while doing exactly what you're doing right now. Well, you can. Gable Media has revolutionized the way you earn your continuing education credits with a groundbreaking approach. Forget running around town and scouring the internet for credit-worthy courses. Fulfill your CE requirements effortlessly by listening to engaging podcasts just like the one you're listening to now. Our podcasts are designed to educate, entertain, and inspire, all in a user-friendly environment. But wait, there's more. Architects, Gable Media is also approved as an AIA Continuing Education Services provider. Upon completion, we handle everything, from reporting your hours directly to the AIA to storing your certificates in your personal Gable Media profile for your self-reporting needs. So follow the link in the show notes and start earning your credits in the most innovative and entertaining way possible with Gable Media.